Many people in the autistic community say they go out of their way to try to communicate effectively with people who aren't on the spectrum, often masking to fit in, doing their best to understand nuance and tone and body language. But what if so-called neurotypical thinkers took a moment to learn, to help understand and improve their communication too? Well, joining us for a neuropsychological perspective is Dr. Hannah Correll. Good morning, Doc.
Hey, Jenny, how are you?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Hey, could you take us through what it means to be neurodivergent?
Yeah, so it's a beautiful word that's been crafted to really reflect how we all have differences. So some people have blonde hair, some people have brown hair, some people have blue eyes, green eyes. And you can also have a difference in the way your brain is wired. So that just kind of refers to the way the different parts of your brain connect with one another and the way they send messages. So somebody who has a neurodivergence might have an overabundance of connections, so their brain sends lots and lots and lots and lots of information and it's really stimulating for them. Or maybe they have an underdeveloped area where their brain's not sending as much information as other people's, so they seek that stimulation to try to get the information in more abundance. And it can mean that they have differences in the way that they relate to other people. So like with social skills that we all use, they might have a little bit of a different rule book on how they relate to people and how they interact.
So that could mean maybe not really being able to read body language, or maybe missing allusions or things that people say that aren't completely direct.
Definitely. So for neurotypical, we have what's called social diffusion, right? So we all learn social skills because we've observed other people, we've vicariously learnt them. No one probably taught you, Jenny, to nod your head or to say, or to look at a person. Those are all verbal and nonverbal cues that we give each other to show that we're listening and we're paying attention. But if you're a bit neurodivergent, sometimes those implicit cues, you don't pick up on them and you don't learn to do them yourself. You have to be explicitly told, you need to look at the other person, you need to nod your head, you need to ask about their day or their thoughts or their experiences, and you might only interact for very, you know, functional purposes. So the way that you interact can be quite different to the way that other people interact. And that's just a sort of a difference in the way that you see the world and you interpret people around you. It's not necessarily a bad thing and it's not necessarily a disability. It's just a difference in the way that you're interacting. You're a bit of a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, so from what I understand, the people that can mask it really well or go out of their way to nod and smile and try to understand, that can be exhausting, right?
Yeah, so what sometimes happens, and this is very common in women especially, so women with autism, for example, develop really, really good skills called camouflaging, assimilation and masking. And what that basically means is masking, you like putting on a mask, it's like putting on a face or acting a certain way, like the way that you've seen other people act. So having a little script in your mind where you say, hello, how are you? And then they say, I'm well, how are you? And you have a little bit of a format in your head that you act out. And it takes a lot of energy to do that. We know what it's like going to school all day. We know what it's like working all day. Imagine if you had to go to school but also had to do a job of acting all day long. That would be quite exhausting. So what happens is people who are masking and socially masking get to the end of the day and they feel really, really exhausted. Their cognitive cup is overflowing, and they might have a little bit of a meltdown. They might have trouble regulating their emotions. They might hold it all inside, and when they get home, that's when they fall apart in the safe space of their own house. So the way we can sort of help somebody with a neurodivergence is to reduce that demand we place on them to have to act.
Right. Yes, and stimuli as well is a big one, isn't it?
Absolutely. So if we're sort of thinking about, well, how do I help my neurodivergent friend or family member, the best thing that we can do is to reduce the load around them and the expectations around them to act like a square peg when really they're a round peg. So, for example, that might mean not forcing them to look directly at you. So even though it might seem like they're maybe being rude because they won't look at you, understanding, no, they're not actually being rude. They don't mean to come across that way. They're genuinely just different, and not putting an expectation on them that they have to look at you, or not putting an expectation on them that they have to speak if they don't want to. It might be things like letting them wear noise-cancelling headphones. to reduce the noise. It might be having a bit of leniency with the school uniform or the work uniform, because for them it's really scratchy and it feels like cactus prickles all over their body. So allowing them that flexibility to wear something more comfortable. It might be having a quiet space in the school or in the workplace where they can go into a room that's got no noise. Maybe the blinds are closed, so it's not very bright, and there's not many people in there, so there's not a lot of movement, there's not a lot of social demands placed on them. And that just gives them a space to reduce that water in their cup so they're not overflowing and they've got a bit more bandwidth to come back and deal with the rest of the day.
Neuropsychologist Dr. Hannah Carell's with us talking about neurodivergent thinking, autism and communication. And Doc, from what I understand, the way that neurodivergent people think might mean that they misinterpret things, like when someone says something and it's kind of an allusion to something, or there's nuance in it, or they're being sarcastic or something like that. That's kind of getting lost.
Like it's raining cats and dogs, or pull your socks up. All of those things involve sarcasm. They involve idioms. They involve the ability to understand it using a metaphor or analogy. Whereas if you have a neurodiversity, you take things very literally. I literally had a patient the other day whose little sister said, you know, chuck me my phone. And so she literally chucked her the phone because that's what she said, not understanding that she meant, you know, pass me my phone. So, you know, we can do a favor to people with neurodiversities of being very literal and explicit in the way we speak. Say what you mean. Don't use sarcasm. Don't use metaphors. Don't use analogies. Just say exactly what you mean and exactly how you're feeling. And that will help them to remove some of the mystery around interpreting your messages and reduce some of that, you know, cognitive overload that's going into their cup.
I think we can all learn something about being a bit more blunt as well.
Yes, remove the mask.
Thank you so much. It's really lovely to have a chat with you today about an important topic that doesn't get talked about enough, Dr. Hannah Carell.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jenny. Thanks for giving it some time on your platform.